Welcome to SCOTUscast, Pharmaceutical Sales Representatives and Overtime Pay Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On April 16, 2012, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in Christopher v. SmithKline Beecham Corporation. This case presents two questions. First, whether federal courts must defer to the Department of Labor's interpretation of its regulations addressing the outside salesman exemption from the overtime requirements imposed on employees by the Fair Labor Standards Act. And second, whether pharmaceutical sales representatives who cannot themselves sell prescription drugs are considered outside salesmen and thus not entitled to overtime pay under the Act. To discuss the case, we have Anthony Casso, who is an associate professor at Chapman University School of Law. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Casso.
Hello. I am Tom Casso from Chapman University School of Law, here today to speak to you about the oral argument in Christopher v. SmithKline Beecham. I filed an amicus brief in this case on behalf of the Center for Constitutional Jurisprudence in support of the respondents. This case has the potential to say important things about administrative law and the role of the courts in interpreting administrative regulations. First, to the background. The primary issue of interest to the parties concerns the scope of the exceptions to the Fair Labor Standards Act. Enacted during the New Deal era, this law sets limits on work hours and requires that most workers be paid at a rate of time and a half for overtime work. There are a couple of categorical exceptions to this rule. Among others is the outside sales representatives exception. Outside sales representatives are individuals that are highly compensated and work away from the company offices. Their primary job is to secure sales for the company, and they are generally compensated based on their performance through commissions and other incentive-type payments. The legislation left the details of how to define these exemptions up to the Secretary of Labor. The Secretary enacted a regulation to the effect that the outside sales representative exemption apply to individuals who made sales, quote, as defined, close quote, by the Act. In this case, we're looking at whether or not pharmaceutical sales representatives qualify for the outside sales exemption of the Fair Labor Standards Act. The pharmaceutical sales representatives are the sales force for the pharmaceutical companies. Of course, they do not sell prescription medicines directly to consumers, nor do they even sell the drugs to the doctors. Instead, these sales representatives try to convince doctors to prescribe their company's drugs, when medically appropriate, the next time the doctor sees a patient with the condition for which the drug is made. Pharmaceutical sales representatives earn incentive pay based on the total sales of the drug or the increase in sales in the sales representative's territory. Although there was no sales commitment per se, and indeed it is illegal for the doctor to make such a commitment, the pharmaceutical sales representatives have been treated as if they qualified for the outside sales exemption of the Fair Labor Standards Act for the last 70-plus years. They set their own hours and did not earn overtime pay for time spent in excess of 40 hours per week. That all changed in 2009. That year, the Department of Labor filed an amicus brief in litigation filed by a pharmaceutical sales representative seeking overtime compensation. In the amicus brief, the Department of Labor argued that pharmaceutical sales representatives did not qualify for the outside sales exemption of the Fair Labor Standards Act because the representative did not consummate a transaction that resulted in the transfer of title. This led to a conflict between the circuits on whether pharmaceutical sales representatives qualified for the outside sales exemption. The Second Circuit, in In re Novartis Wage and Hour Litigation, ruled that the Department of Labor's amicus brief interpreting its own regulation was entitled to controlling deference, and thus concluded that pharmaceutical sales representatives were not covered by the outside sales exemption of the Fair Labor Standards Act. The Ninth Circuit, however, came to a different conclusion in this case. That court ruled that the regulation did not itself define sale, but merely referred back to the statute. Thus, no deference to the Secretary of Labor's amicus brief was required because it was interpreting the statute rather than the regulation. At this point, I need to step back and explain the two major deference schemes in administrative law. Most attorneys are already acquainted with Chevron deference. This is the deference a court affords to an agency's interpretation of a statute, where Congress has left an ambiguity in the statute and has delegated to the agency the authority to fill in the gaps of the legislative scheme. This Chevron deference was not involved in this case, since we were not dealing with a regulation that purported to implement a statute. Instead, the issue, as framed by both the petitioner and the Department of Labor, was the interpretation of the agency's own regulation. By framing the issue in this manner, the petitioner sought to take advantage of what is known as Auer deference for the Supreme Court's decision in Auer v. Robbins. The rule of deference in that case is actually traced back to the 1945 Supreme Court decision in Bowles v. Seminole Rock and Sand Company. There, the Supreme Court ruled that an agency's interpretation of its own ambiguous regulation is conclusive, unless it is clearly erroneous. In other words, the court ruled that the agencies, not the courts, have the legal power to interpret the legal meaning of administrative regulations, even when the agency interpretation appears only in an amicus brief. This degree of judicial deference to an administrative agency's interpretation of its own regulation has come under fire in recent years. Just last term, Justice Scalia filed a concurring opinion in a case stating that the issue of deference should be reconsidered by the court. Justice Scalia argued that allowing an agency to both draft and interpret its own regulations raises significant separation of powers concerns. So back to this case. The issue before the Supreme Court here is whether to grant deference to the Department of Labor's interpretation, as stated in its amicus brief, of its regulation regarding what constitutes a sale. The problem in this case is that the interpretation first announced in 2009 seemingly reversed more than 70 years of prior policy. If the court decides not to grant deference to the agency interpretation, it must decide whether to overrule Auer v. Robbins and Bowles v. Seminole Rock on the requirement to defer to administrative agencies' interpretation of their own regulations, or whether to create a new exception to the rule of deference to cover apparent changes of policy or newly announced interpretations. If the court does not defer to the administrative interpretation, it will also have to decide how it should interpret the outside sales exemption as it applies to pharmaceutical sales representatives. The oral argument in this case was held on Monday, April 16th, with Tom Goldstein representing the petitioners, Paul Clement representing the respondent, and Malcolm Stewart arguing for the government as the amicus in the case. The questions to the petitioner started off with Justice Alito asking Mr. Goldstein to explain the government's position in the case. This is never a good sign. The justices also wanted to explore the impact of the ruling. Justice Ginsburg drew laughter with her question, wanting to know if the sales representatives were entitled to time and a half for the time they spent on the golf course, developing the relationships with the doctors. Much of the questioning, however, turned on how to define a sale under the Fair Labor Standards Act. Malcolm Stewart of the Solicitor General's Office presented the argument for the United States as amicus in the case. He was asked questions that focused on the administrative law issue, with Justice Breyer asking why the court should not require notice and comment rulemaking in this type of circumstance. Justice Kennedy chimed in that it did not appear particularly fair for the agency to pursue this apparently new interpretation after more than 70 years of silence by simply filing an amicus brief in litigation. Questioning of the respondent focused on the unique nature of pharmaceutical sales representatives and whether they could be said to make a sale, since there is no commitment from the doctor to prescribe the drug, and legally there can be no such commitment. The court also asked about the administrative law issue, with Justice Kennedy asking for some prior case authority on which he could rely, and Justice Breyer noting that he did not agree with the argument to overturn Auer v. Robbins. He also noted, however, that these issues ought to be decided by administrators rather than the agency attorneys writing amicus briefs. So how will the court rule in this case? The number of questions on how to interpret the statute indicates that the court may not grant any deference to the agency interpretation of the regulations in this case. How the court defines the exception to the deference rules laid down in Auer v. Robbins and Bowles v. Seminole Rock will be the key. And the court did not discuss any theory other than the passage of time between the enactment of the original statute and the new agency interpretation. Of course, that still leaves the question of how to interpret the statute. Are outside sales representatives for the purposes of the Fair Labor Standards Act? The questioning was too close to guess at the probable outcome on that issue. In any event, look for the decision in this case to add to the body of administrative law on deference and to give us clues on how the court views the tension between deference to administrative agencies, the role of the courts, and separation of powers. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.